If you're thinking that the radio's full of dreck, then it's time to listen to Soundcheck.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Don't know if you saw this on the news last week or read it in the papers, but a group of Afghani musicians, most of them teenagers, came and played concerts at the Kennedy Center in D.C. and Carnegie Hall here in New York. And the reason it's such a remarkable story is that these kids grew up while the Taliban were in power. And when the Taliban was in power, all music was banned. For a budding pianist like Milad Yousufi, forget about playing music. Even listening could be dangerous.
Impossible to listen to the music. However, if they knew that you were listening to music, probably they would cut off your ears even.
That's right. Listening to music could cost you an ear. Actually playing an instrument could mean the loss of a hand. Now music is making a comeback in Afghanistan, but the road back still has some potholes, as we'll hear later. For us Americans, well, we don't have to face that sort of challenge in order to make or listen to music, but, you know, everyone has things they need to deal with. For singer-songwriter Ali Spaltrow, it was a purely practical issue. How do you make a record while holding down a boring day job at a video store in Maine? Well, she found a way to turn that job into the gateway to her songwriting, and we'll hear the results when she performs live as Lady Lamb the Beekeeper. For other people, though, just the act of leaving home and going to a performance can be a dangerous thing, especially for kids on the autism spectrum. Attending theater performances or other public events can be challenging and even impossible. That's where the Autism Theater Initiative comes in. Joining me here in the Soundcheck studio today to tell us about it is Lisa Carling. She runs the Theater Development Fund's accessibility programs. Lisa, welcome.
Thank you for having me here. This is very exciting.
And Donya Fahim is co-founder of the organization Autism Friendly Spaces. Donya, welcome to you as well.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Donya, let me ask, why would going to the theater be a disturbing thing for kids or adults, for that matter, with autism?
That's a very good question. Because individuals with autism have difficulty with their self-regulation, so being able to take in the different senses, as well as difficulty understanding communication, difficulty with their social skills. So all of that together becomes very challenging, knowing the rules of the theatre, being able to take in the sound, the visual effects, the smells. So it's hard for them to be able to access something as wonderful as the theatre.
So what for us is, you know, a great night out, for someone with autism can be absolute overload.
Absolutely. And for many families, it's not even an option for them to consider even going.
Right. Now, so Lisa, at what point did you begin to think, you know, I mean, TDF has done things for hearing impaired, sight impaired.
Yes.
At what point did you think we need to do something for these people?
We were very aware that we didn't have any services for children on the autism spectrum in the New York City public schools, and that got us thinking and talking and consulting and getting input from parents and psychologists, and Disney was certainly our partner in that. And
you did The Lion King.
We came up with the idea that a designated performance, having TDF buy out the entire house and make it a warm, welcoming, non-judgmental atmosphere for families with children or adults on the spectrum was the best way to do this. TDF's all about reaching underserved audiences. Mm-hmm. And the autism community for too long has really been shut out of, you know, mainstream events that families take for granted, particularly over the holidays. They just can't do these things because as a parent, you don't want to be in a situation where your child is having a meltdown and people don't understand.
Right.
So anyway, TDF went the route of a designated performance. It took a lot of planning, and The Lion King back in October 2011 was a wonderful experience. No one knew what to expect. It had never been done before. No one knew what the effect would be to have a 1,700-seat house, the Minskoff, filled with children and adults on the spectrum and their parents, grandparents, siblings.
Yeah. cape, step into the sun. There is more to see than can ever be seen, or to do than can ever be done.
The response was fantastic. Mm. The outpouring of appreciation and joy from the families was something you'll never forget.
So, and you didn't need to forget it because you then went and did it again with Elf and
yes,
then came back to The Lion King.
Right. We also did Mary Poppins, and we are going to do our fifth autism-friendly performance on Broadway of Spider-Man.
You don't have to fly too high to get too close to the sun. See the bug fall from the sky.
Now, I wanted to ask you about that because it seems like, it seems like loud noises,
right.
People flying around, things exploding, a spider hanging herself, that, you know, the things that we find
right.
in Spider-Man might be exactly the kind of things that kids with autism wouldn't understand and wouldn't know how to process.
That's right. And that's the reason why we work in partnership very closely with Lisa and with TDF to assess the show and to work with the production team in terms of the modifications that would be possible to happen, but without changing the show. Because for many individuals, Spider-Man is a superhero,
mm-hmm.
and they know him, they recognize him from the cartoons, from the TV, from movies. And so, but with modifications and with support, so modifications to sound, to some of the lighting, it can be, and even having supports like earplugs, perhaps even headphones, that can help for the individual to then enjoy the performance. And I think to Lisa's point, that when you have the entire audience, there's an acceptance mm-hmm. because the awareness is already there. And so if the children or the adults are excited, are getting up, it's okay.
And there's a place for them to go.
And there is, absolutely. So it's set up in a way that we have an active break area if they need a break. There's a calming area. And in fact, in the theatre where we're going to be doing Spider-Man, there's a very quiet room
mm-hmm.
where they'll also be able to see it streamed live.
I guess was the assumption that all of these theatrical experiences would be musicals? Is music somehow, a calming influence to people with autism?
I think it's very difficult to generalize. So, I mean, we know that music certainly has its therapeutic impact and effect. However, that being said, it's the visual, it's the music mm. together that the children do enjoy, and adults too. But it could also, I know there have been autism-friendly plays that if we sort of compare, say, Mary Poppins,
mm-hmm.
there was a lot more dialogue than there was music, and that was enjoyed as well.
What about, Lisa, for a show like Spider-Man, what kind of modifications can you make to the show in terms of not just sound and light, but the show's length? And, kids with autism, they don't have long attention spans by and large.
No, but we stand behind presenting the same great show. We're not looking to the producers to alter it in any way. And the staging, the aerial choreography in Spider-Man is staying the same. It has to, for safety reasons. With Spider-Man and Green Goblin fighting, you need those spotlights on
mm-hmm,
them, and there
mm-hmm.
will be a spill into the house. And the myth of Arachne, that staging needs to stay the same. Donya was very good about helping us with a disclaimer. Arachne wraps a thread from the loom around her neck and appears very briefly to hang herself, but then she transitions into a spider. It's a very short scene, mm-hmm. but there was some concern, would very young children find that disturbing? So what makes Spider-Man such a wonderful experience for so many audiences stays the same. But in terms of technical adjustments, the show is willing to work with us in songs where there might be gunshots,
mm-hmm.
screaming, siren sounds, turning that down a notch or two so it's not as startling. I wanted to say that TDF surveys our audiences every time we do an autism-friendly performance, and Spider-Man was one of the top requested shows.
Mm-hmm.
as well as other musicals.
By the parents or by the kids?
By the parents.
By the parents.
By the parents.
Yeah.
So there does seem to be a tendency to go after the big Broadway musicals that are child family friendly.
With Lion King, Mary Poppins, Elf, you know, I can imagine that parents of autistic kids, like parents of most other kids, have all those DVDs at home, and the kids already have some familiarity with the story, whereas Spider-Man isn't. However much it's based on the character from the old comic books, is an original story. Do you prep the kids before they get there?
Yes. We have a character guide, which is a very popular tool that we develop with Autism Friendly Spaces. Donia is from Autism Friendly Spaces. We rely on them as our sort of autism eye. And our wonderful coordinator, Deb Stein, works very hard getting the pictures, the social story written.
And what is a social story? What does that mean?
Donia.
A social story is where you provide the individual with the visual support as well as a narrative as to what to expect. Mm-hmm. And it's a technique, a therapeutic technique that comes from priming. So priming is preparing you before something happens. And that's where if we can do that as much as possible, so there isn't the unexpected that's occurring, then that helps the individuals to become a little bit more regulated. Because if you know what you're going to expect, you can generally stay a little calmer.
So it's illustrated for kids who
absolutely
don't read.
Absolutely. So it's illustrated pictures of the theatre, pictures of what they're going to see. So that's because what we want for them to do is to be able to be prepared from when they leave their home until they get to the theatre, through the theatre experience, and then back home again. And then the character guide that Lisa had mentioned, because they're used to either seeing Spider-Man on TV or the comic book, they don't necessarily know that that's the same. I think Spider-Man is a little clearer, but with Green Goblin, it's a different image. So it's a character guide that helps them to understand who's who in the show.
We're speaking with Donia Fahim. She's co-founder of Autism Friendly Spaces, and Lisa Carling, who runs the Theatre Development Fund's accessibility programs and launched the Autism Theatre Initiative in 2011 with a performance of The Lion King. The next autism-friendly performance will be Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark at the Foxwoods Theatre on April 27th. Now, mentioning The Lion King, Derek Davis was in the cast of that performance of The Lion King on Broadway, and he is here as well. Derek, how different an experience was it for you in front of a completely different type of audience?
Well, first I want to say that TDF and Autism Friendly Spaces, as well as Disney, did a great job of preparing all of the performers prior to the performance.
Oh, so now Donia and Lisa were talking about preparing the kids. It didn't occur to me that you guys needed to be prepped as well.
Absolutely, absolutely.
What did that consist of?
Well, they gave us handouts, and we had several meetings detailing what the performance would sound like, feel like, what the children would be doing in the audience, what the parents would be doing, the movement and everything of that nature. First, that was taken care of, and then after that, they kind of prepped us as to what would be different in the show as far as the lighting, the sound, the house lights not being completely down, things of that nature. But to Lisa's point, everything else was kept exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Nothing else changed.
And who were you in The Lion King?
Well, I play Mufasa. That day I was in the ensemble because here in New York I understudied the role of Mufasa.
Okay. And what was your experience?
The experience was something, honestly, that I'll never forget. It was my single most favorite performance on stage in my life. Because as an actor, you perform and you give out, but you love to feel the reciprocation of emotion and feeling from the audience. Normally, the audience is completely dark, mm-hmm. and usually for the majority of the show, except for at the end of big numbers, there's no applause, so it's pretty silent. So you don't really hear or sense to a great level the response from the audience. With the autism-friendly performance, you can see the audience, number one. That's the first
thing.
The house lights are only brought down to about 50%, 45%. And other than that, you can see the children reacting and just being themselves, and you can hear them making their sounds and things and responding so positively. But beyond that, you can feel it was so strange to tangibly feel it, but you can feel the gratitude from the parents to just be able to be in this kind of a setting and be at great ease and just enjoy themselves.
And was it distracting at all to you and the rest of the cast that, you know, I mean, inevitably kids have to get up and their parents have to take them to the quiet room or whatever, or maybe they don't come back at all?
It wasn't distracting at all. You would think that it would be, and we thought that it would be, and they warned us that if it is, just to continue to keep the fourth wall up and do the show, but it wasn't distracting. It felt so much more like a dance, if you will. Like there was just the emotion from the stage going to the house and back from the house to the stage. And once you get past the sounds, it was wonderful.
So Lisa was talking before about how, you know, the experience was such a great one for her and the people at TDF to get that kind of feedback. Mm-hmm. You were getting that immediate feedback.
Immediately. You could feel it. It was
nice. Tense. Now, Lisa, is it your hope at TDF, the Theater Development Fund, that some of these kids might eventually, after going to one or two or three of these autism-friendly performances, be able to transition into, for lack of a better word, I'll say regular theater?
Yes. We had a very touching experience with the first Lion King parents with twins, boys on the spectrum, and the father needed to sit with one of the twins in the very back of the orchestra while the mother sat with the other twin farther front with the other brother. And they came back again for Mary Poppins, and the whole family sat together. They sat together closer to the front of the stage, and it's moments like that that you think, this is the right thing to be doing. So yes, to answer your question, it's funny, all the years I've been involved in disability, it's been vision loss, hearing loss, mobility loss, everything you can measure. But when you're dealing with people on the autism spectrum, cognitive loss, developmental disabilities, anything can happen. Any artistic experience can provide a breakthrough. So we're confident, TDF is committed to our Autism Theater Initiative, and we're confident that the more we can do this on Broadway and open up the audience, that hopefully some families will be able to transition with their children into regular performances. Typical audiences.
Right.
Atypical.
Right. And Donya, I guess realistically you'd be talking about kids who are at the higher functioning end of the spectrum.
It really depends, because you could be higher functioning on the spectrum but still have a lot of self-regulation difficulties and sensitivities, so not necessarily. It's really, as Lisa was saying, it's so individual, and I think the parents know their children and they know what they're able to do. I think, as Lisa was saying and Derek said too, what was so magical about this experience and the feedback that we received is that parents were saying, we never thought we could ever do this was a dream. We, you know, that the day comes when we as a family can attend Broadway.
Go to the theater. April 27th is the next autism-friendly performance, and it will be Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark in the Foxwoods Theater. We've been speaking with Lisa Carling, who runs the Theater Development Fund's accessibility programs, Donya Fahim, co-founder of the Autism-Friendly Spaces, Derek Davis, an ensemble member of that Lion King cast on Broadway, and to the three of you, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
This is Soundcheck.
I wondered, was it gone? Well, now I know. So when she calls, don't send her my way.
Join us tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on soundcheck.org to listen to the indie rock duo The Milk Carton Kids. They'll record their session for an upcoming Soundcheck broadcast.
Michigan's in the rear view now. Keep your hands where I could see them. You took the words right out.
California indie rock duo plays songs from their upcoming album, The Ash and Clay, before it gets a release next month. That's the Milk Carton Kids, a live audio stream, 2 p.m. Eastern, on soundcheck.org. Up next, another soundcheck session, this one from the singer-songwriter who records under the name Lady Lamb the Beekeeper. And later, music in Afghanistan after the fall of the Taliban. This is Soundcheck.
It's Soundcheck's Blind Date. It's a blind date between you, the listener, and an artist you've probably never met. It's possible you could find true love. And now, back to our host, John Schaefer.
Well, on today's Soundcheck Blind Date, we're setting you up with Ali Spaltrow, a songwriter who records under the name Lady Lamb the Beekeeper. And as Lady Lamb the Beekeeper, she hails originally from Maine but has found a home in Brooklyn. Her new album is called Ripely Pine, and it will be the first chance most of us get to hear her music. But of course, you're getting a chance to hear it in the studio today in this radio blind date. Ali, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So we asked you, as we do with all of our blind date guests, to fill out our Soundcheck blind date questionnaire. And question number one is, describe your music in three words or less. You wrote, saucy spaghetti and meatballs. I'm going to let you slide on the and, which makes that four words. Saucy spaghetti and meatballs. What did you mean by that?
Well, let me think. So the music, I would describe it as pretty saucy. Just, you know. And spaghetti, you know, it's a little messy, a little sloppy, but in a good way. And it's also very meaty, and it has some balls, if I'm allowed to say that.
You're allowed.
Cool.
So it's got a lot of, like, gluten and stuff in it.
Yeah, it's hearty. Yeah. Filling.
Well, let's hear some. Although you have the new record, you're going to play an older song for us first, right?
I am, yes.
What's this called?
This is called Between Two Trees.
This is Lady Lamb the Beekeeper, a.k.a. Ali Spaltrow, live on Soundcheck.
Kick at a pillow till it makes you tired, tired. Bummed out my whole pack and I gave my fire, all my fire. Emptied my pockets, these empty pockets. Emptied my pockets and I waited for your call. Laid on the pavement, down on the pavement. Laid on the pavement with my ear against the wall. Stood on the mountain, up on the mountain. Stood on the mountain and I called. I am no savior, I am just your dog, and I'm all tied up, see how I'm tied up, my wrists are bound, I am the boat on your dock, I'm just the boat on your dock. Just a girl. Oh. let's knock some time off the clock. Kill the night and tie these knots all tangled up. Let's knock some time off the clock. Kill the night and tie these knots all tangled up. Let's knock some time off the clock. Untie my knots all. Emptied my pockets, laid on the pavement, stood on the mountain in a car. All your name, empty your pockets, lay on the pavement, stand on the mountain, hear how I don't call your name.
That is Lady Lamb the Beekeeper, live on Soundcheck. The subject of today's Soundcheck Radio Blind Date, the new album called Ripley Pine. That's not on it. That's an older song from Ali Spaltro, the singer and songwriter who is Lady Lamb the Beekeeper. Although that's not on the record, Ali, it sounds like it, you know, it's cut from the same cloth, some nifty guitar playing, some kind of dark imagery.
Sure.
You know,
yep.
Moments there almost sounded like it came out of the murder ballad tradition, which, you know, the opening track on the record, Hair for the Ferris Wheels, sort of at times sort of goes down that dark alley too.
Yes.
But this is an older song. Is that because the newer songs are more band oriented? Is Lady Lamb the Beekeeper now more of a band thing?
No, I would say that Lady Lamb the Beekeeper is still... you know, primarily my solo project, although I did feel that for this record, in order to really respect the music and give them what they wanted to be each song, that they really warranted more musicians.
Mm-hmm. So getting back to our Soundcheck Blind Date questionnaire, and you can see all of Ali's answers to the questionnaire on our website at soundcheck.org. One of the questions is, who was your first musical crush? And you wrote, The Beatles, when I was 5. I even had a Paul McCartney haircut. Which one? The kind of the bowl-shaped one?
Exactly, from yes.
Really?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So you were a Paul as opposed to a John or George fan?
I was mostly a Paul fan as a young kid, yeah.
Hmm. And yet, given what we've heard already and what we were just talking about, it would have pegged you more as a John kind
right.
of.
Right. As I got older, I became a John Lennon.
Okay.
Fan, yep.
What is the most interesting thing about you? Also from our questionnaire. Growing up, you wrote, I was convinced I would be a point guard in the WNBA.
Yes.
That I guess that didn't work out, but...
It didn't work out, probably for the best, but I was so, so obsessed with basketball. And, I mean, I would play until the sun went down, mm-hmm. you know, and my favorite thing was shooting three-pointers, which was... an interesting thing to see because I was a very tiny, tiny little girl. You know, I was like 3 feet tall and just ripping it up and just dribbling through all the tall girls. And
mm-hmm.
yeah.
So did you play like ball in high school? Did you play like varsity or JV?
I didn't. I stopped playing before high school and I moved to Germany for a few years and I lived in a little town that had nothing but cobblestone. So as you can imagine, the basketball, when I dribbled, it just went
yeah.
sort of sideways and I got very frustrated and got into music.
Okay. And then we asked, if you could be any musician for a day, who would it be? And you wrote, and this is an interesting answer, Janelle Monáe. And you had numerous reasons for, you know, she can dance, I'd love to, and you wrote, I'd love to experience what it must feel like to have such a funky and vivacious band backing me with all those horns. You do kind of get a sense of that on the track Aubergine from the new record. It's got the big band and the horns and stuff. Was that you kind of living out your Janelle Monáe fantasy for a moment?
Oh, for sure. I'm hoping that eventually I can play that song live with a huge horn section backing me. Yep.
Let's hear what it sounds like on the record from Lady Lamb the Beekeeper. The song is Aubergine. That's a little bit of what the album sounds like, called Ripely Pine, from Lady Lamb the Beekeeper, a.k.a. Ali Spaltro, who's with me on this Soundcheck Radio Blind Date. And despite the fact that most of these songs are band songs, there's one or two that you can do solo.
Sure.
One of which is Crane Your Neck. You want to do that for us next?
Yes, I would like to.
All right. It's Lady Lamb the Beekeeper, live on Soundcheck.
Press my ear against your back, not even a week after we met, and I felt your heartbeat fall like raindrops in a bucket. I used to have a pretty nice spine, but I neglected to give it a name, so each time I tried to straighten it, I couldn't get its attention, and I placed my palm upon your collarbone. And I wish to fall asleep deep in your mellow, gently as a mouse curled up in a ball, as gently as a mouse until tomorrow. We ripped off all our clothes, and this included all our jewelry, and we ran hand in hand back when you brought out the beast in me, the parts that are dormant. I wish to set them free. And in the clarity of this night, I make myself believe I can sleep easily alone. But there's a hunger under my skin, it's gripping at my bones. There's a hunger like a lion's, and it's ripping right through my bones. So I push my limbs all forward like a tree does in a storm, and then I walk into my kitchen and I lean against the window. I'm as calm as a baby lamb that is being led. I'm as blue as blood before the you crane your neck. Twist your hips and crane your neck. Twist your hips, crane your neck. Twist your hips and bend your body back. You've gotta be starving. You've gotta be starving for it. You've gotta be starving. You've gotta be starving for it.
That's called Crane Your Neck, live performance, solo from Lady Lamb the Beekeeper. Her new album's called Ripley Pine. That song is on it. Lady Lamb the Beekeeper is Ali Spaltrow. Is it true that a lot of these songs were written in a secondhand DVD store and sort of under the spell of the various movies that were on the shelves and stuff?
Yes. I worked at an independent DVD rental store in my hometown of Brunswick, Maine for 4 years. The whole time after high school that I started making music, I was recording down there after hours.
Hmm. Did they know that?
They did, yeah. I had the keys. I closed the store at 11 at night, and then I, you know, had all my gear hid secretly in the back, and I'd pull it out and practice and record and write till about 4 or 5 in the morning.
Wow.
Yep.
At Bart's and Greg's DVD Explosion in Brunswick, Maine.
Yes.
So how did it feel to get into a real studio to do this, the Ripley Pine record?
It was a completely different process. I was used to, you know, for 5 years I recorded on a little digital 8-track by myself. So it was a completely new thing. And also I'd never spent more than a day recording a single song I'd ever written. I made sure that it was completed within, you know, anywhere from 45 minutes to just the full day. And so to have made this record in nearly 11 months was a new process for me and very rewarding.
Mm-hmm. I like the record a lot. It's called Ripley Pine from Lady Lamb, the Beekeeper, and she's been the subject of today's Soundcheck Blind Date. Again, her blind date questionnaire answers, you can find them all on our website, soundcheck.org. Ali, it's been fun having you here. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Sean.
This is Soundcheck.
If I'm the cop, then you're the robber. We'll play cowboys and Indians in the yard for the slaughter.
Okay, I want you to listen to this closely. Tell me if anything is wrong with this 1971 song by the singer-songwriter known as Lobo.
Me and you and a dog named Blue.
Hear anything wrong? I mean, other than the fact the song is insufferable. If I were a school teacher, I would have to rap the knuckles of Mr. Lobo. This should really have been called You and I and a Dog Named Blue. Boo. All right, so that doesn't rhyme, but still. Songwriters sometimes take liberties with the rules of grammar. Next week, our contributor Faith Saley will join us with some egregious examples of bad grammar in music. But we also want to hear from you. Tell us about a song that made your inner school teacher want to shriek. Let us know at soundcheck.org or leave us a message at 866-939-1612. Music was forbidden for a generation of young Afghanis who grew up under Taliban rule. Now they're learning not only to listen, but to play as well. We'll find out more in a moment. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Afghanistan has a rich musical tradition, but during the reign of the Taliban from 1996 to 2001, all music was forbidden. Playing music could mean having your hand cut off. The American invasion forced the Taliban out of power about 11 years ago, and the task of rebuilding the musical life of Afghanistan has been making slow but steady progress. In 2010, the Afghanistan National Institute of Music began. Its story is a remarkable one, and with us to share it is William Harvey, an American violin teacher at the Institute and founder of the Afghan Youth Orchestra, and Milad Yousufi, who is an 18-year-old pianist who studies at the Institute. Welcome to you both.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Milad, you were just a kid, a small kid, when the Taliban were in power. What did people do if they wanted to sing or play music?
Actually, it was impossible to listen to the music. However, if they knew that you were listening to music, probably they would cut off your ears even.
Was there, did people practice in secret? Did people sing in secret?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. Singing in secret.
Now, William, when you went to Afghanistan in 2010, the year that this institute was founded, what did you find?
I was very pleased to find that by the time I arrived, a lot had already been achieved by Dr. Ahmad Sarmast, the founder of Afghanistan National Institute of Music. So I was fortunate to come when I did, really, because now the challenges are more about how to bring music back rather than confronting powerful elements of society opposed to music.
Is it true that under the Taliban regime, pianos were often chopped up for firewood, and if they were too big and couldn't be chopped up, they would just explode them with ordnance?
Yeah, there are reports of that, absolutely.
Wow. Now, it's hard to imagine a whole country going 6 years without any music, and especially, Milad, for young kids growing up without music, what was that like when the Taliban left? Did any of your friends know how to sing or play instruments?
Actually, I'm not sure about playing an instrument, but when I was a child, I used to draw a piano or a drum. I used to draw a piano on the paper, and then I used to play on it.
Really? And so you would draw, like, piano keys?
Keys, yeah. Drumming on some pillows, some kind which I had in my house. But actually, even during the Taliban, I was playing music.
But you couldn't let anybody know about it.
Yeah, definitely.
So how important for you has this institute been, this Afghan National Institute of Music?
Actually, it was really important. And then I used to suffer mental abnormality when I was a child, because of the Taliban and the loud sounds of war. So when I enrolled in music, and I found myself very comfortable, and still I'm really happy. And now I'm in America, it's because of music and because of an institute and William Harvey, definitely, and our founder, Dr. Ahmad Sarmast.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Milad Yousufi, who's an 18-year-old pianist at the Afghanistan National Institute of Music. William Harvey conducts the Afghan Youth Orchestra there, teaches violin. What brought you to Afghanistan originally?
I've wanted to come to Afghanistan ever since the fall of the Taliban, when I read an article in the New York Times quoting a 16-year-old from Jalalabad saying that I have not heard music in so long, words don't describe how I think I will feel when I finally hear it again. And so I called the State Department in about January of 2002 and said that I wanted to go. And they said, well, you're a student and there's a war going on. But I didn't really give up. I wanted to do whatever I could to use music to bring people together.
Did you find that the situation was perhaps more than you had bargained for when you got there initially? Or did you kind of know what you were getting into?
I would say for sure over the last 3 years, the challenges are not the challenges I anticipated and the opportunities are not the opportunities that I anticipated. It's always best to go into something like this with a very open mind. I mean, I discovered on my second day there that I could get a pretty decent pizza delivered right to my house. So
in Kabul?
Oh, yeah.
But what are the big challenges facing the Institute and the kids?
I think some of the challenges include dealing with government bureaucracy. The resistance provided by insurgents to the government gets a lot of attention. And what gets perhaps less attention in the media here is the desire of some in the government to focus very much on who's getting credit and who's getting appreciated and acknowledged. And it can seem like they're trying to create a little bit of North Korea in Afghanistan, which I think is very damaging. But fortunately, we do have people like Dr. Sarmast who are standing up for the students, standing up for what's right, and standing up for music.
Who funds this school?
We get funding from a variety of international sources, such as embassies of Denmark, Finland, United States. The biggest single funder is the World Bank. And we are part of the Ministry of Education of Afghanistan.
Now, Milad, you study piano at the Institute. Do you study both Afghani music and Western classical music?
Yeah, we study both. Afghani music and Western classical music.
Mm-hmm. So you've had this great opportunity to come to the United States. You've been playing some Chopin for people. Yes. I would love it if you could play a traditional Afghani song for us today.
Yes, why not?
Okay.
I'd love to, yeah.
Where is this song from?
It's made by people who are in Mazar. And actually, there's a time during the 1 year we have to go to the Mazar Sharif because there are lots of roses in the desert. Everyone goes to picnic.
So you go to Mazar because there are roses?
Yeah.
To pick roses? And
yeah, especially in our equation.
Okay. I won't attempt the title, which is in the Dari language, but in English it would be Let's Go to Mazar.
Yep. Definitely.
All right. Let's hear a performance in our studio. This is Milad Yusufi at our piano on Soundcheck. That is lovely. Milad Yusufi, an 18-year-old Afghani pianist, here with some of the musicians from the Afghanistan National Institute of Music. They have been touring around, playing here in New York and elsewhere. William Harvey is a violin teacher at the Institute and founding conductor of the Afghan Youth Orchestra. And that song is called, what the heck, I'll try it, Biyake Birim Ba Mazar. Okay?
Yes.
Let's go to Mazar is the translation. Now, the Institute, Milad, is this kind of, does it feel like a safe place for kids to go in Kabul?
Yes, actually, definitely. It's a safe place. Actually, both boys and girls are studying together as sisters and brothers, so it is the most wonderful thing that it is the only thing in Afghanistan that we're together, we study together.
Now, William, Milad mentions a really crucial point, which is boys and girls studying music at the Institute. How unusual, how important a development is that?
That is very unusual. I would say that for anyone studying music, male or female, there's still a bit of a stigma attached to that in Afghan society. But
a stigma how?
Well, that music was historically considered not something that is the most moral or proper thing that you could be doing. And a common insult for a musician is to refer to them as a barber, because in the past the same people cutting hair were the people also playing music. So we have male students who have family members who are uncomfortable with them studying. And for girls, I think there's a double stigma, because still it's the idea that a girl should be in school as long as she wants, maybe even through university, it's still somewhat controversial. And also the idea that she should be able to study music is something else that's controversial. So having girls study music is really quite extraordinary.
So as remarkable as the story is of the ANIM, this institute, it seems like there might be forces within Afghan society that don't think the institute is such a great idea.
Yes, yeah, I definitely, those forces are there, some within the government, some outside the government, some in society, some including family members of some of our students. So it's important to remain dedicated to this pursuit, because we believe that the opportunity to express yourself through music, it's a universal human right that should not be denied.
It's the ANIM, the Afghanistan National Institute of Music. We've been speaking with William Harvey and Milad Yousufi. This is Soundcheck. From another of the youth ensembles from the Afghanistan National Institute of Music, wrapping things up for Soundcheck tonight. Tomorrow on the show, violinist Joshua Bell. He's now conducting as well, and will play here in the studio. We'll also hear live music from the experimental electronic duo Matmos. Telepathy will be involved. And the next installment in our occasional series called That Was a Hit. Our contributor Joe Levy joins us with a top 10 hit from 1990 that enjoyed a baffling amount of success and then faded away. In the meantime, you can check us out online to listen to interviews and live sessions on demand. Tomorrow at 2 p.m., the Milk Carton Kids are performing here in the studio. You can listen in at soundcheck.org. Find our podcast on iTunes and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.